The way the energy conversion works is that you have about as much as you can use most of the time. And so it has to go hand in hand that you open up, you put in the larger carburetor at the same time as you put in the bigger tube. Otherwise, the whole scene gets screwed up. My teacher describes in gory detail how if you arouse the kundalini before you are in a certain state of purity, how the energy, the kundalini, the rising energy, in order to support itself within the body, since it's not able to receive energy yet from life, will eat up your liver and your blood and your bone and the whole thing, and you just, you know, you fall apart just from the raising of kundalini. Because once the snake starts, it chomps everything in sight, and if it can't have a steady influx of where you can look at the sun and get food for it, because you can't get the energy into the state that it eats. See, and all you've got to recognize is the possibility of one person in the whole universe who lives on light. And there's one person who lives on light. One guy has to step on the moon for technologists to know that man can step on the moon. Everybody, we don't have to say, well, if 100 step on the moon, we'll be sure that man can step on the moon. It's not a probabilistic thing. It's that kind of science that is based on the single occurrence. And that's enough. And in regard to that, it's interesting that many people say, why doesn't science go and study? Why don't you get the people that are performing miracles to perform them from scientists so that they would change their attitudes? Well, Teresa Neumann was around for years living the way she lived, and the scientists never went near her. And they were all writing treatises about if you don't have a certain number of carbohydrates and proteins and so on, you're going to die. The body can't live, which is true from who they are. And when you talk about Teresa Neumann, you say, well, it's a hustle. Somebody must send her food in her laundry every week or something like that. You know, obviously, she can't live on that. The reason that you can't handle anything other than the gross food is because of the subtle nature of the attachments, some of the ones we were talking about yesterday. The attachments to a time-space being, to time-space manifestation. That if you could surrender sufficiently to just merge into the universe around you, become one with the tree and one with the sun and one with it, you would then be all the energy. And it's only your resistance to when it all starts to happen. Many of you have that experience over and over again of it starting to get very fluid, very liquid. The boundary is starting to fall apart and you get uptight because you say, I'm going crazy, or I'm going to cease to exist, and you get frightened. And that's the way the ego holds on, that fear of the unknown. The fear of the loss of that engineering being who says, this is the way it works, and this is who I am. And I mean, I'm planning to do sadhana this way. I don't want it to happen that way. That isn't what I bargained for. See, if the wind comes and I put up my body against the wind, then I am using pitting my energy against the energy of the wind. There is another process whereby I surrender to the wind, I become the wind, and then I'm like a sailboat, and then I get all the wind's energy. It becomes my wind. And in a way, this process of opening yourself to forces, like when we were doing the scenes in New York City, and a fire engine would drive up Third Avenue, and we'd have to stop talking because you couldn't talk against the energy of the fire engine. I'd say to everybody, this is free energy the city of New York's giving us. You know, pass it up your spine. Well, come on, work with it and just take it in and get high off it. Get high off the fire engine instead of like, that's an obstacle. Getting in my way, making a lot of noise, I can't talk. Because I'm me and the fire engine's it. Like, here I am, I'm... And just go into it and you just go out on it. You go out on the sound of the fire engine. You get high off the fire engine. See, and the secret is, as you see oneness in everything in relation to you and it, you get the energy, that exchange goes on with everything around you. I mean, I'm sure you have all been through the experience that I have been through many times of being extraordinarily tired, and then something comes along and turns you on, you completely forget you're tired, and you get all this new energy. Or you meet one person and you spend an hour with them and you're completely drained. And you meet another person, you spend an hour with them and you got more energy than you had when you began. And it's been a very intense discussion and you're so exhilarated when you finish you can't go to sleep, you got so much energy. What could all that be about? I mean, in terms of expenditure of muscular energy and so on, muscle, you've used up chemicals in the same rate. One of them's an input, and one of them's an output. There's no doubt about it, or some process of that nature. So the clue is clearly going to have something to do with the interface between who you think you are, or who you're being, and that which is around you. It's the same thing as if you do tratak on the sun, which means, like Bhagwan Das, my guru brother, he will sit like this in the morning out in the field, and the sun will rise there, and it will set there, and it's a perfectly clear day, and it's a flat, like, desert. And he will sit, and he will look into the sun with his eyes wide open, and he'll never blink. And he will never blink, and he will just follow the sun right across the heavens until it sets on the other side. That's like 12, 13 hours. Now, yet we know that if you look into the sun, you burn your retina. Now, how does he not burn his retina? He doesn't burn his retina because he and the sun are one. Because you only burn the retina of an ego. That's the way it works. You only burn the retina when you are trying to see it, the sun. But when you give up the trying to see it, when you give up the individual trying to know, that kind of thing, you and the thing you're working with become one. In bhakti yoga, the way it works, well, yesterday we were talking about Hanuman. In that particular yoga, that thing is brought about through loving service or surrender. See, in Maharaji's head, in the guru's head, he is female to God who is male. And therefore, his whole relationship is one of opening up into. And as a result of that opening up into, he experiences that unification with process around him, and therefore there is this extraordinary input of energy through him. Sri Aurobindo talks about it. He talks about opening upward and the energy coming down through the head and into the body. The force, life force. And then everyone that is around Maharaji feels this fantastic force or energy coming emitted from him. And so from my point of view, I sit here with Maharaji's picture and Maharaji's thoughts, and I think about him, and I do my beads, and I honor him, and I just open myself to him, and open myself to him, and surrender to him, and love him more. And in the course of that, energy comes through me. And then people say, you have so much life force, or so much light, or something, and it's all his. And he's gotten it from Sam, who's up there. And who Sam got it from is none of our business. But the minute I would say, I want that energy for myself, like with all this energy, you know what I can do? Forget it. Because that's that problem of the little carburetor and the big input. Because the ego, the finite ego, is only able to chomp up so much energy at once, and it can't handle all that energy. It'll burn out the circuits. It's like raising kundalini before you're ready. If you've got a big ego and you raise that energy, it'll just eat through the whole system. Blood, bone, and all.
How would the kundalini be raised?
Through forcing it, through methods such as pranayama. See, pranayama, the breath control, overrides the ego.
Did you ever do it with drugs?
LSD, sure, of course. Of course you can. So the model, you give it all up to have it all, again applies just as it applied yesterday in another context. It applies in this context about energy. That the more you transcend that subject-object relation to the things around you, the more the energy that is inherent in that object and the energy that is in you become one. Now, that's what it means when they talk about a guru taking on the karma of someone else. Because if he and you become one, all of your hang-up, all of your attachment, all of your heaviness become his too. And his energy becomes yours. And there's this open exchange. And in a way, you would say, well, he gets lower and you get higher, in the sense of there's some kind of meeting of energy. But the fact is, he knows how to take energy and merge with it and just keep going out on it. At first, when people would bring, I've been working with this. This is a really interesting, this is why this summer is such interesting work from my point of view. And it's very, very hard work. So, because the way the game works is that I honor and am open to this being in a certain way, as a result of which certain energy comes through me. And therefore, many of you sense that energy in me, and because it feels light and feels like a lot of energy, you are attracted towards that. And I'm sitting here, I'm the middleman. See, I'm just sitting watching this whole process. So you come and you bring your thing, see, to this light. I'm sitting watching this whole process, you understand. That's my role. I just happen to hang out where this conversion is. I'm a watcher of it. So you bring in your karmic package all neatly tied and folded, you know, big heavy burden you've been under, who I am. And you bring it in, you set it down, and like statement, here I am, this is who I am. Make something of it. Free me of it, do something. Shed light on it. And I just sit all day, and it's just like Maharaji, I now dig what he's doing, really. That all day long, women line up on either side of him to feed him. And they bring him this food they've cooked all night long. And they come, and they've each got some special dish. And he's just sitting there all day long, and there are lots of kids around. And the woman will bring a big bowl of something, and she'll come up, "Oh, Maharaji, the thought that she's going to feed a being this high is just blows her mind." You know, I mean, this is her work. This is her religious work. She holds the bowl out, and she takes the spoon in. He goes, and she sticks the spoon in, see, and he has taken on her prana. He's taken on her vibrations, because those entered into the food that was cooked, too. And then the minute he's taking the food, he then has the... He sends her away, and the food is distributed among all the kids. Then he turns his mouth this way, and the next spoon comes in. And we figured out he eats roughly 15 meals a day. I mean, my teacher, who is his disciple, drinks two glasses of milk a day. I mean, it's like Jack Spratt and his wife, and Maharaj just keeps eating all that. Well, I suddenly realized what that process is. That's the process of... I mean, at the level he's at, because of the powers that are available, he can do anything he wants with his body. He can manifest his body any form he wants, so that it has nothing to do with what he takes in, obviously. That's irrelevant for a guy like him. But he just does that to take on the prana. And in the same way, when somebody brings you that pranic package, you eat it. It's a weird thing, you know. It may sound really pretty far out. But you chomp it up. You chomp it up, and you chomp it up with mantra. And you chomp it up in such a way that you keep moving it up your spine, and you move it up into your head. What you're doing is you're converting a kind of energy, which is the energy in which they are manifesting their karma, which is in a very heavy, slow form of energy, and you are, through one pointedness of mind, converting it into another kind of energy inside your body, or inside your psyche, your subtle body, your astral body. And I, at the moment, can work with reasonably small packages of karma. The load gets too heavy, I sag a bit, because I'm not used to eating that much that fast. I get indigestion. And I suddenly, oh, God, one more sad story, and I've had it, you know. Well, usually, a person can come in with their karma, and the more I hear, the higher I get. It's not like I'm a sadist. I mean, I'm not high at their expense. It's just that I'm constantly, like a fellow boy came yesterday, beautiful, beautiful boy, about 15, long hair, very, very high, very far out boy. He was brought here. He's almost like not functioning. He came in and he said, I said, "How may I serve you?" And he looked like this. He said, "Everything's everything else." That's for openers. That's a good line. Everything's everything else. I say, "Right." Sure, you're right. You know. And then he'd sit there for a long time, and I'd say, I'd say, oh. You know, he'd gone into his thoughts. He was like in a state I've been in many, many, many times. I know the state well, in LSD, where your mind is going so fast, and it's spinning out illusion after illusion, and everything is as right as everything else, and how can you bring it down into words? Like, what's to say? And yet he knew he wanted, and he's suffering. He's suffering. I said, "You're suffering?" What's suffering? That's good. Now, he's come, and no matter what the problem is, he's terribly confused. He's afraid he's going to become insane. And that's his karmic burden that he's bringing. Like, "Watch it, baby. Be nice to me or I'll go insane." Or it's delicate. Like, "You've got to put me back together again. I got to get my head together." Or there's some danger here, or fear, or watch it, or, you know, that kind of feeling. And it's an easy one to get sucked into. Like, okay, we'll watch it. Sit over here. Don't move. I'll get, you know, I'll get a damp cloth. And I looked into his eyes and I said, you don't have much of a sense of humor, do you?
Sense of humor?
I said, I mean about your own predicament. I said, it's really very funny, you know. And a kind of a limp smile around the edges of his mouth. Well, it took maybe 10 minutes before he and I were laughing, and he saw, like, how funny the whole predicament was, and he was calming and centering, and it was all falling into place beautifully. And at the same time, I was getting stoned out of my head off the sky. Completely high. I mean, I was, like, saying, it's all everything.